to glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. If you want to find me on the internet, find me on the web, go to glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. That's MikeLuoma. You can find me by name on Twitter and Facebook too, after their.coms, just slash Mike Luoma, MikeLuoma. There is a Glow in the Dark Radio Facebook page too. Go to facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. I have a mailing list as well. When you sign up for it, you get a free PDF. It's an anthology of my stuff, a bunch of previews and things. It's called the Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. It contains an Alibi Jones short story you can't find anywhere else, some preview pages from comics that I've got out or that are coming out. There's a lot there. And again, it's exclusive to my mailing list. You only get it if you get my emails. And I sometimes give you free exclusives in the emails, in the mailings as well. In fact, that just happened. I'll tell you more about it when we talk about the news. But first, let's talk about what's happening on the podcast this week. In this episode, we're starting a new book, Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. It's the second novel in the adventures of Alibi Jones. Now, in our last episode, Alibi and Katie visited their Dakur friend Kit on the colony that was, well, misnamed Paradise. Things now take a turn for the worse, as the crime lord, René Lavallure, decides to recapture Katie, whom he considers his property. That all starts in Chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. It's coming up on this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. My summer podcasting schedule hasn't been maybe all that it should be. A little loose this summer, a little spotty. But I thank you for bearing with me. I'm hoping to get back on track, back on schedule, so to speak, as we hit Labor Day and head towards the fall. I got to admit something, though. I had hoped the chapters of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her would not need the same kind of attention that the Alibi Jones novel, the first novel, needed for its audiobook. It needed a lot of re-editing and actually some work on the levels and things, so it was a bit more work to redo it, but I was also doing it with putting it up on Audible in mind. And that's what I'm doing with this one, too. After I finish with it, I'm going to be putting it up on Audible. But now I say finish it because, well, it turns out I do need to re-edit some of these chapters, at least this chapter one. I had to re-edit it, so once again, this is a remastered, re-edited audiobook experience. Now tighter and with fewer odd pauses. It's a long chapter. It was originally over a half hour. I've got it down. It's actually like 25. Like I say, now tighter and with fewer odd pauses. And you're getting to hear it first, right here. On Glow in the Dark Radio. That's coming up. But first, a little bit of news. As I was mentioning, or briefly referred to, just a short time ago, talking about my mailing list, I do give away free stuff. And this week, my mailing list got a free copy of the Vatican Assassin graphic novel, issue number 1. The graphic novel comes out in 4 parts, as it did when it was in black and white. And we now have the first part completely recolored and relettered. So I got it out there. I gave it away to my mailing list. It will come out commercially in just a little bit. But if you were on my mailing list, you got a special treat. The free preview issue, number 1, of the Vatican Assassin graphic novel. It's all now in color thanks to Juan Carlos Quatordio. He's coloring and tightening up Christian Navarro's artwork on the thing. It's pretty cool. It's good to see. And again, you could see it if you're on my mailing list, and maybe you have. And if that's the case, thank you. You can sign up for the mailing list on any of my websites, glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, or go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio, and sign up there. I don't hit you with a ton of emails, like maybe once a month, and not always that. So You get free stuff and you don't get spammed. It's a pretty good mailing list, I think. But, you know, I'm biased and all. But that's enough news. Just talking about giving stuff away. It's still the summer months, so still a bit easy going, I suppose. And we're about to go into chapter one of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. Next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Tired of your everyday commute? Wish you knew what movies to watch? We offer you Flash Pulp! 3 to 10 minutes of fiction brought to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings with goodies every Sunday with 3-Day Fish, who is always listening.
Now, here's Chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Each time he sleeps, the memory returns as a dream. At first, he observes. He watches himself stand to speak, champagne glass in hand. My name is Alibi Jones.
No! Stop! Why can't I wake up?
Alibi again lives through that horrible night.
They know who you are, Alibi.
Kitruf Grundler Alkaz, Kit, purrs up at Alibi with amusement from his place next to him at the main table. Not yet completely in the dream, Alibi can't stand to see Kit so happy, knowing what is to come.
So sorry, my friend. Wish I could go back and change anything.
The dream memory draws him in. Alibi smiles at his friend, the Catman, as they celebrate Kit's joyous day. Kit is a proud Dakor, the apparently feline race native to the world of Her. He's dressed in Dakor formal wear for the ceremony, resplendent in green and gold diplomatic family formal robes, his dappled brown and rusty gold fur oiled, brushed, and shining out from underneath the satin folds.
I'd like to lead you in a human custom, Alibi tells the assembled decor.
The 50 or so cat-like aliens in the expansive banquet hall all look his way. Alibi scans the brown, gray, and tan furred faces, so alien, yet somehow comfortably familiar. Alibi decided long ago that familiarity comes from the light he can see in the eyes of the decor. Eyes shining with intelligence and empathy, lit by a soulful spark. Though similar in appearance to upright house cats, to Alibi's mind, the Dakor are the most human-like in character of all the alien races he's encountered, though they are still very different.
When we humans get married, as we call it, Alibi tells the Dakor, the friend of the groom, the male in the joining, usually raises a glass and says a few words about his friend. We call it a toast, so I'd like to offer Kit and his new mate Trish a toast.
Alibi raises the champagne glass a little higher.
Toast?
Kit asks, sounding confused as he looks up at Alibi.
The word means cooked bread, does it not?
Is that what it translated as? It also means, Alibi searches for another word. Tribute.
Oh. So, you raise your glass and say, what?
Kit asks.
Something nice, I hope.
Something, well, kind of nice, Alibi says. I've been working on it for days. Alibi Jones and Katie Ramsey, his on-and-off girlfriend, Kit and the Dakor, have gathered together for the Dakor equivalent of Kit's wedding day, or day of joining, with his join-mate-to-be, Trish. Kit has looked forward to this day for months. All the while, Alibi has given him a hard time. Alibi's natural response to Kit's nearly constant talk of his join-mate-to-be and their upcoming joining day. Despite all the talk, Alibi was only able to meet Kit's bride, Trishka Nagurlardl, a few weeks prior to the day of joining. The silver-haired, slender Dakur female was kind enough to let her new human friends, Alibi and Katie, call her Trish for short. Thinking of her, Alibi allows himself a quick glance over at Katie. She catches his eye and smiles back, caught up in the joy of the ceremony.
Ah, Katie. Not mad at me. For the moment.
If Alibi understood Dakur customs correctly, Trish and Kit had been destined to be joined from the time they were cublings, promised to each other by their families. The Dakur way, Kit assured him. You call them by longer names, Alibi says to the alien crowd. But I know the happy couple as Kit and Trish. I've been friends with Kit for over a year now. I haven't known the lovely Trish quite so long. But after these last couple of weeks spending time with her and Kit, I feel like we've been friends forever. Trish was special. Kit taught her English a few months ago, and she picked up the human tongue quickly, coming from a Dakur diplomatic family trained for facility with languages. More than merely understanding the syntax and grammar of English, she picked up on subtleties that allowed her to appreciate the human sense of humor. She and Katie became fast friends. Trish could appreciate her sarcasm in ways that Kit still could not. Truth be told, Alibi didn't always pick up on it either.
Women.
Trish, sitting on the other side of Kit, wears white and green ceremonial robes, a beautiful golden tiara with a blood-red gem in its center. The sunrise of her shines from where it sits atop her head. Kit's father, Rocker Fronda Grundler, a top diplomat, procured the prized Dakur artifact, an ancient ritual crown, for their joining ceremony. He'd called in some favors to secure its use. Alibi clears his throat. Now, today, we gather to celebrate their joining. Katie beams at Alibi as he enjoys being the center of Dakur attention. Glass in the air, he smiles over at Kit and Trish, his newlywed, newly joined, friend and his new joinmate. Alibi looks from Kit and Trish out to the rest of the large group of cat-like aliens gathered to celebrate the joining.
Like a pride of proud alien lions.
Part of Alibi remembers he is dreaming and wishes he could scream.
The hunters arrive soon enough.
He cannot alter the outcome. For their joining festivities, the families of Kit and Trish leased a party room on a getaway station. Invited guests were summoned to Paradisimo, a free-floating vacation station situated just beyond the border of Dakur-controlled space. Paradisimo's many banquet halls and hotel facilities make it a mecca for Dakur and humans looking to get away from it all. As it's outside the borders of the Solar Alliance as well, it can also be a refuge for less savory types looking to get away from the authorities in nearby human and Dakur space. Dakur joinings and human weddings anchor a large chunk of the respectable side of Paradisimo's economy. Celebrating families rent entire packages, hotel and banquet rooms, staff and catering included. Alibi and Katie had been pleasantly surprised to discover their entire trip had been paid for by the joining families. Evidently, it was a Dakur custom for honored guests. Even if they'd wanted to, they'd found they couldn't pay for a thing. Entertainment, lodging, drink, and food, it was all covered by Kit and Trish's families. From his standing vantage point, Alibi sees two Dakur waiters, staff from the station, walk into the hall. He grows confused when they start making strange noises and light flashes out from under their serving trays.
Thub, 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 thub.
The two Dakur waiters are firing rubber bullets into the crowd. Dakur fall where they're hit, or scramble to get out of harm's way in a chaotic attempt to avoid getting killed. Rubber bullets cause human beings serious injury, break bones, and cause massive contusions. The Dakur physique's bone structure is more fragile. Rubber bullets punch through their bodies. Those bullets that hit vital organs kill instantly. As the dream plays out again, Alibi tries to will a change to what happens.
If only I could move faster, do something to stop the death.
But he can't. It all unfolds as it did a month ago, as it has almost every night since, playing on repeat in slow motion through his mind. The glass he holds shatters. So do two bones in his middle and index fingers as the rubber bullet hits his upraised, toasting hand. He drops to the ground and looks for Katie as shock momentarily spares him the feeling of pain. She's on the floor in front of him. Her chest is moving. She's breathing, alive. He looks to the side and sees Kit on the ground. The Catman is unharmed, but he cradles the limp form of his new bride in his arms. Dark black Dakur blood spreads out in a thin pool in front of them.
No, 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 no!
A rubber bullet crushed half of Trish's skull, caved in the left side of her head, and knocked the tiara away. Kit hangs over her dead body, shaking. He seems to feel Alibi's eyes on him and looks up.
She is dead. My destiny has been killed. She has died in my arms, Kit says, his voice a violent growl. I will kill them, whoever they are. Whoever is responsible. They will die.
Kit, stay down! Alibi yells over at him. Alibi looks back at the advancing gunmen in time to see them drop the trays and raise their guns. He ducks back down, cursing when his injured hand hits the floor. The pain of it finally hits him.
Damn! Oh shit! That fucking hurts!
Thub, 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 thub.
The waiters fire again.
Hold it!
An amplified human voice orders in English. Alibi looks up to see a man in an EVA suit walking up between the dead Dakur bodies strewn around the hall.
No, wait. That's not an EVA suit.
The man is an illegal cyborg. His human body is enhanced by artificial tech through surgeries not allowed inside of the Solar Alliance. His legs and arms appear to be fully mechanized, his head surrounded by a skull shield and communications array. He is obviously mic'd for sound as he orders the waiters around.
Where are the humans?
His amplified query rings out. The Dakur waiters seem to understand, but do not answer in English. One of them grunts and points with his gun over towards Alibi. The mechanized man approaches Alibi in silence.
Thought I'd hear servos or something.
You're Alibi Jones?
The man asks in his artificially loud voice. Alibi doesn't answer him.
You're a very lucky man,
the cyborg says.
My employer doesn't want me to kill you. Thinks that will make him the wrong sort of enemies.
The cybernetic man snorts an amplified grunt.
I said you're already the wrong sort of enemy, and now would be an excellent time to take care of you once and for all. After all, we know you've developed an attachment to the girl.
The half-metal monster waves his rifle casually at Alibi. His words give his employer away.
He works for Lavalur. Katie, this is all about Katie. After over a year, Lavalur came to collect her. Still thinks he owns her. We didn't know it, but we'd actually come to him.
My employer couldn't believe how lucky we were that you two waltzed right into one of his own establishments.
Paradisimo was supposed to be an independent station, a co-op, but all was not as it seemed. Apparently they had a silent and secret partner. Without being aware of it, the Dakur families had rented the facilities for their celebration from René Lavalur, a powerful interstellar crime lord based on the planet Kismet, outside of human and Dakur law. Lavalur also claimed to own Katerina Ramsey and her family. This was all about Katie. How could Lavalur resist taking her back when they had just about delivered her to him?
Sleep now,
the half-robot man says, pointing a finger at Alibi.
Swoop!
Alibi feels a slim sliver dart hit his arm and burrow down beneath his skin. The tranquilizer starts to affect him. The silver man before him elongates, grows wide, and then too tall, as Alibi watches him turn and point at Katie.
Swoop!
Alibi's world begins to dim. The last thing Alibi sees is the mechanical man grabbing Katie by the arm. His world goes black. The last thing Alibi hears before he passes out is Katie shouting a name.
Peterson!
Alibi shouts out the name as the dream ends, as he wakes up in his apartment on Cat's Eye. He sits up in bed and flexes his hand and fingers, still sore a month later, even after the healing. The bitter memory and the dream fade a little as he stirs.
Fucking Peterson,
Alibi says to himself as he stands. He rubs the top of his head through his short black hair and steps into the refresher. Alibi relaxes a little as he feels the familiar tingle. He lets the vibrations cleanse his skin and hair. Not keen on being alone with his thoughts for too long after reliving the painful memories, Alibi doesn't linger in the stall. Besides, he has office hours.
Must get to work. How ludicrous. A mediator with office hours. I miss Mbeke. Miss him for a whole lot of reasons, but especially miss the way he used to run the mediation corps. Under the SAIF? Under this Colonel Brandywine? It's way too militaristic. And dumb.
Doesn't really make sense to have mediators under the military, Alibi says to himself as he heads out of the bedroom.
Do you always talk to yourself?
Alibi jumps as a man's voice calls out the question from the shadowed living room.
Thought I heard you shout my name before, too,
the voice says.
Lights!
Alibi calls out. As the lights come up, a plain-looking man appears on Alibi's couch. He has short, thinning blonde hair and wears a dark business suit with a white shirt and blue tie. Unremarkable. A man who would blend into any crowd of business travelers.
Who are you?
Alibi demands of his uninvited guest.
How did you get in here?
I think you know who I am. Or at least who I represent,
the man says, playing mysterious. Lavalore? Alibi speculates.
You said I shouted your name.
What, you're Peterson? I thought that metallic monster man who kidnapped Katie was Peterson.
Him? The man responds. No, Mr. Chen, to whom I believe you are referring, is hired muscle. I'm valued more for my mind, believe it or not. The boss hasn't found a way to enhance that. Not yet, anyway. But we don't have the same laws against cybernetic enhancements on Kismet that you do here in the SA,
Peterson over-explains, talking down to Alibi.
No need for you to sound so judgmental.
Yeah, 'cause turning people into half-robots is a great idea,
Alibi cracks back.
It has made Mr. Chen more valuable to the boss,
the man points out.
That is one of the best ideas Mr. Chen has ever had.
Alibi realizes he's talking to an intruder.
I'm calling the base,
Alibi says.
Base, this is
it's not working right now,
the man tells Alibi, interrupting him.
You're calm. It's down.
Running through some self-diagnostics, he informs Alibi.
Stuck in a bit of a loop, I'm afraid.
What do you want, Peterson? Or whatever your name is,
Alibi asks, beginning to lose his temper with the man.
Despite your ill-conceived preconceptions, my boss is a very caring man,
the man says in an even tone.
Did you know he cares about your health, Mr. Jones? For example,
my health?
Your health. You've been engaging in some very unhealthy behavior over the last couple of weeks. My boss wanted me to tell you he's worried about you.
Oh, really? Can I kill him where he sits somehow? What can I use as a weapon?
Alibi glances around the room, trying to keep his eyes on Peterson as he does.
Really, Mr. Jones,
Peterson says, his tone still dripping condescension.
Sometimes people engage in behavior that's detrimental to their health because they don't know any better. My employer wants to be sure you know better, you see.
I don't like where this conversation is going,
Alibi says.
Why don't you get the fuck out of my apartment, Peterson, or whoever you fucking are?
Throwing fuck around. Do you think that helps? Makes you sound tough. You're young, Mr. Jones, so I am going to be more patient with you than is usually my habit.
The man shifts on the couch, brushes a piece of lint off the leg of his suit. You've been asking questions, Peterson says, looking back up at Alibi. Questions about Renee Lavallure. Questions about Kismet. And questions about Miss Katerina Ramsey. So, I can give you some answers, he says. Not the ones you want to hear. But the knowledge I give you could save your life if you learn from it. So you're here to teach me, Alibi says.
Right.
Ignoring his sarcasm, Peterson continues. First of all, it would be better for you if you forgot all about Ms. Ramsey, the man cautions Alibi. Second, I can tell you from my own personal, first-hand observations that it is never wise to ask too many questions about Mr. Lavallure, especially not in public places, with so many possible ears listening in. The man nods, agreeing with himself. Finally, there's something you need to know about Kismet.
What's that?
You know how poisonous and deadly most of the dead Eldred worlds are, don't you, Mr. Jones?
I do, Alibi answers. Necessary knowledge out here.
Well, here is another piece of necessary knowledge for you. It would be, let's say, beneficial to your health for you to consider Kismet to be such a world. To you, Mr. Jones, a dead world, poisonous, deadly.
Are you threatening me?
He balls his hands into fists. Though unarmed, Alibi challenges the man anyway, with nothing to back it up.
I don't care.
Not in the least, the man says, an oversweet tone to his voice. He gestures at himself. Do I appear to be threatening you in any way?
Well, not so much personally.
I'm not threatening you, Peterson explains. You just need to understand, Mr. Jones, that if you set foot on Kismet, you will end up a dead man. And you should also understand that continuing to ask about Miss Ramsey will prove unhealthy for you as well. It would be best if you forgot all about her.
Oh, really?
Alibi stands defiant. Really? Peterson stares back at Alibi, locked eye to eye across the living room. Actually, from what I'm told, the two of you were no longer a couple. Curious as to why you're so interested in her whereabouts.
She's still important to me. She's my friend, Alibi says. He gets angry as he finds himself justifying his actions to Lavallure's man.
Ah, Peterson smirks. You love her. How touching. I can hear the disappointment in your voice.
The man stands, straightening his suit coat and brushing himself off, preparing to leave.
That's it, then, Alibi asks. My work here is done. Message delivered, the man says. He crosses the room. He has to pass by Alibi on his way to the door, but pauses before he gets to him. He looks Alibi in the eye. If I were you, I'd learn to live with your disappointment. Your unrequited love could get you killed.
Threats will get you nowhere, Alibi says, staring back with all the bluster his small bit of bravado left can muster.
Oh, don't be so cliché, Jones. I'm trying to resist, but...
he sighs.
It's not a threat. It's a guarantee. A promise.
You see, Jones, hackneyed, so played out. Peterson shakes his head. Living with disappointment is better than dying, going after the unattainable, Jones. Disappointment is a fleeting feeling. The short-lived aftershock from a bitter life lesson. Get used to it. People are disappointing, Alibi Jones. Everybody disappoints. Whole worlds will disappoint you at some time or another, if you let them. Get used to it. Live with it. Don't die stupidly. Best advice I can give you.
The man looks over at the door. And with that, good morning, Mr. Jones.
He resists the urge to whap Peterson as the man brushes past him. Alibi turns to watch him leave.
Let yourself out, Alibi jokes at the closing door.
Alibi walks over and opens the door. He walks out into the corridor and checks in both directions. Peterson is gone.
Neat disappearing trick, Alibi says to himself.
So, Lavallure's noticed my prying. felt compelled to send Peterson himself to warn me, if that was really him. Lavalore's right-hand man. Lavalore does not like to lose anything or anyone. That asshole Piccolo was right. Poor, pathetic, lying, dead fuck that he was. He was right about Lavalore.
Alibi goes back into his apartment to get ready for work. As he finishes getting dressed, he finds himself thinking of Piccolo.
Been almost a year since he died.
Alibi looks in the mirror. He remembers how Piccolo lied to his face.
Told Kit and I that Katie was his sister, and we believed him at first.
Alibi stopped Piccolo from bringing Katie back to Lavalore, and then Katie shot and killed Piccolo before he died. Piccolo warned Alibi Lavalore would send others. The SA courts later cleared Katie of all charges, accepting her plea of self-defense.
He didn't lie about Lavalore coming for her. And so we got Chen and his crew on Paradisimo. And now Peterson in my living room, threatening me, telling me to stay away from Kismet. All the more reason to go.
That was Chapter 1 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Peterson, the deadly assistant to Rene Lavalore, showing up in Alibi's living room. That can't be good. Now, I wanted Mr. Peterson to be a bit unassuming, like a person that if you passed him on the street, you wouldn't know that he was, you know, chief assistant to the big crime lord. So he's actually named after the character on the Bob Newhart show, the old one, where Bob was a psychiatrist. Yep, that's where that name comes from. Revealed here, I believe, for the very first time. Mr. Peterson. Mr. Carlin used to give him a really hard time. You know, I haven't used Mr. Carlin's name, but maybe I will sometime. But there's also this idea, and I don't know that I've talked that much about it. Peterson is more a title than it is an actual person. In other words, there have been several Mr. Petersons that go by that name. It's not necessarily really their name. But that's what Rene Lavalore calls his assistants, Mr. Peterson. There's a couple references to it. But you gotta catch him. And you might not catch him if you didn't know, you know what I mean? So there's a couple things that you wouldn't have learned if you didn't listen to this podcast. I hope you come back for Chapter 2 as we find out whether or not Alibi is that stupid. If he's willing to go to Kismet, even having been warned away. Or if the people who care about him try to talk him out of it. We'll see. That can happen too, you know. It's all coming up in Chapter 2 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Just want to remind you first, again, to sign up for my mailing list, if you haven't yet, which you can do at any of my sites, glowinthedarkradio.com, mikeluoma.com, or on the Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. When you sign up, you get a free PDF, an anthology of my stuff, including an Alibi Jones short story not available anywhere else, comic book pages, part of the Vatican Assassin Appendix, which is hard to find these days. And again, it's exclusive to the mailing list. You can't find it anywhere else. You only get it when you sign up. And if you sign up for the mailing list, you also get other free things. Just this week, I gave away a free issue number one PDF of the Vatican Assassin graphic novel. Issue one, the first 23, 24 pages. Could be yours. Could have been yours. Maybe it is yours if you're already on the mailing list. If not, sign up. Again, at glowinthedarkradio.com. MikeLuoma.com, that's MikeLuoma.com, or at the Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. Those are my web pages, so I don't have to tell you them again, I suppose. And so, another episode draws to a close. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.